and welcome to A Drummer's Guide to the podcast all about the things that it takes to be a professional musician aside from actually playing your instrument. My name is Emily Dolan Davis. I am a drummer by trade, and I'd like to start out by firstly thanking the Patreon supporters, because you guys are the reason that I'm able to do this podcast and have been able to continually do it. And I just wanted to say thank you, because I don't think I have actually thanked you enough. So thank you for subscribing, for supporting. If you're listening right now and you're not part of that crew and you want to be, go to patreon.com/EmilyDrums. Anyway, on with the show. The show, it's so lame. Anyway, how are you? I wanted to talk today on a subject that was inspired by, it was a conversation that I had, and I cannot remember who it was with. I've done so many mentoring sessions this week, and I'm having so many concurrent conversations with people. If you're on my email, in my Instagram inbox, or one of my students, you will understand the amount of people that I'm constantly talking to, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But consequently, I apologize if you're listening right now. This was inspired by you. I'm so sorry that I can't remember the person right now. But anyway, someone was telling me about the fact that they went and did their first ever live show, and when they were younger, this was a while ago, and the whole experience scared them so much that it stopped them from actually performing live again for years, and it really put them back, and it was a really terrifying experience. And this kind of resonated with me, because I think we all have those moments where things happen and they scare you and they make you pull back for a bit, and it might be, you know, a time before you can come back and do stuff. They did consequently, you know, they did get back to it in the end, which was great, and kudos to them. Like I say, if you're listening right now, kudos to you. And I already said that, but yes, I just think there's so much to be said for people that overcome those fears and bad experiences. And as I say, this really resonated with me, because I had a similar experience when I did my first ever recording session. I basically could not have failed more than I did. Like, there was no way that I could have failed better than I did. And consequently, what I did in that situation, I kind of felt like I had two options, if you like, in terms of a decision to make: either to stop playing, and that was it, and this was at, like, I was 17, or to basically tackle all the things that went wrong and just face them, which is what I did, obviously. Thank goodness is all I can say. And it brought me round to this idea of, like, just noticing retrospectively when tackling skills that I have wanted to obtain or goals that I've wanted to obtain, and what a consistent skill that I've put, or not skill, a consistent approach that I've had to developing those skills. And I've realized across the board, and this has started from when I very first started playing, I just didn't really understand that that's what it was until I started thinking about it today, really. And that is this concept of normalization. Doesn't it sound sexy? Doesn't it sound exciting? Normalization. Ah, aren't you glad that you're listening to this right now? So what this is for me is, whatever it is I'm trying to achieve, I have to get to a point where I can do it almost like instinctively, intuitively, or without even, there's no sort of emotion attached to it. It's normalized. This is the normal thing that I do. And it's at that point that I'm like, okay, cool. I officially have achieved this goal. I have officially obtained this skill. Not to say that that means one and done. You know, obviously you have to keep developing skills, and you can always develop every skill that you have. I'm a true believer of that. Although not all people are. It's very interesting when you have conversations with people that think that things like music, there's sort of a finite amount to learn, and then they're done, as it were. And I'm like, oh my god, it really scares me when I meet people like that. I'm like, wow, how do you think like that? That's incredible to me. But anyway. So again, I just thought that I would share some of the experiences that I've had and how I've normalized the skills that I've wanted to obtain, basically. Now, I thought I'd start out with the in line with the inspiration for this, which was playing live. As my friend that I spoke to, that I can't remember who it was, who inspired this. And I thought about that because I remember so well my first ever gig. So it was this Battle of the Bands in the local council ran. So all of the schools in Enfield Council would put in bands, like school bands, to compete. And I was in one of these bands, and I remember, the thing that I remember the most was walking down this really brightly lit corridor and feeling really physically nauseous. And I'm someone who has a fear of vomiting. So I remember this feeling so well because I was so scared, not just about the prospect of what was about to happen, but also because I was feeling sick. I was like, oh my God, I can't be sick, because like that is literally worse than death to me. That's how I felt about it. And again, this is mostly retrospectively because I didn't have this insight at the time. Definitely not. I remember feeling it, and retrospectively, you know, it clearly was because there were so many unknown factors. I'd never sort of been on a stage, performed in front of an audience, at least not outside of school. I think I'd done a few bits inside of school, but it was just like that first step of, wow, I'm going to be playing on stage with a band. That's so cool. But anyway, I was terrified. I got up, I did it. The elation coming off stage, the adrenaline, the feeling, just the, oh, all of that stuff was so great that I think it overshadowed the initial fear, which is great. I'm very lucky that that was my takeaway, if you like, and it led me to carry on. And so it was never really a thing for me in terms of stage fright or anything like that stopping me from going on stage, because then I also remember that I never felt that intensely nervous going on stage ever again. Like, I felt nerves the next time and the next time and the next time, but every time it dissipated. And now I do not get nervous going on stage. And there are very, very, very small exceptions to that rule. And even if I do, it's so mild, I barely even notice it, to be honest. But I never do. And it's partly because of this concept of normalization. I make sure that I know exactly what the hell I'm doing when I'm going on stage. I am an over-preparer. It's who I am. And as I say, just by pure coincidence, by pure luck, me going on stage became normalized. And that was because I was playing so many different gigs with different people in different scenarios. So I was doing, as I said, I was doing these school concerts, which would basically be me and my best mate Charisse, who is also still a drummer, plays with Simple Minds, love her to bits, my bezzy mate. So we would be basically the only drummers, bar our first year there were a couple of others, but we became the only drummers in the school that would play with all of the artists at the summer concerts. So that we'd have like multiple like acts, if you like. And if they needed a drummer, lo and behold, me and or Charisse would be up there with them, which was great. It was really good. It meant that we were playing all sorts of styles and stuff. And that was from age 11. Also, I was sort of playing in loads of different bands outside of school. So doing that. And then I was also going to blues jams. So and That is one scenario that is not normalized for me. It is to a point. Put me in a blues jam, I am happy as Larry. Put me in kind of a pop or like anything around that sort of area, like pop rock kind of jam, like basically a jam that's playing like function kind of songs, fine, I can do that. Put me in anything that's kind of like soul or funk, that's not normalized. That will make me a little bit nervous. Put me in a sort of jazz fusion jam. Forget about it. I'm not even getting up. I am going nowhere near that because that is terrifying to me. That is not normalized. Maybe it will be one day, but right now that kind of that goal is not a priority for me right now. But anyway, like I say, by pure luck, the playing live thing became normalized. I just did loads of it, and retrospectively I realized that is a big thing, because not everyone has done that in the past, you know, and it becomes a big fear, which I totally get. So anyway, that was I think my first experience of like normalization, And then in terms of when I was actively, consciously doing normalization, the first time that I remember, I want to talk about the normalization of skills that I believe are the reason that I have a career, basically. And I think this normalization thing is kind of a really good umbrella of how I approach every skill that I think has given me my career. So the biggest skill that I have, this is aside from playing, obviously, because playing, you've got to be able to play your instrument. It's a given. I say that at the beginning of every podcast episode, but I'm kind of taking that as a given with you. But the biggest skill that I have learnt, that I believe has given me the most work, that has made me reliable, that has made me, you know, people can depend on me to come in and do a good job, that is charting. That I think that skill alone has maybe led to, I don't know, in terms of skills, I'm trying to think about a pie chart and trying to think about the different skills that I can bring to the table the different skills that I have that enable me to work. And I think the charting is probably around the 45% mark, maybe even more. It has enabled me to do so much work and put myself in so many situations because of it, and because I know that I can rely on it. But the only reason that I can rely on my charting skills is just because I've done so much of it. And again, when I first learnt the skill, I don't remember why I started, but I would assume it was out of necessity and I was just needing to learn a whole bunch of songs. And don't get me wrong, when I started, I was slow. I was slow at charting. It took forever. It was a lot of mental capacity was being used. A lot of energy was being used, working out the parts and replaying bits, and sometimes even slowing stuff down to try and work out what they're playing and the fills and blah, 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 and then the structures and all sorts of stuff. It was painful at the start. Absolutely painful. But I don't know why, there was something in me that recognised how important this was and how useful it could be. So I just set out to be like, all right, I'm going to normalise this because I need to be quick. I need to be quick. I need this to be second nature. So what I did was I set myself the task of charting the top 100 albums on the according to Rolling Stone magazine at the time. So that was the task that I set myself. Why I set myself that task, I don't know, because I'm sadistic and a little bit out there and I'm very extreme, and you know this about me. I know that you know that about me. It's who I am. Side note, I did not get through all 100 albums. I did not. But I got through a fair few hundreds of charts of just practicing charting and just doing it. And it kind of, it worked. And the more that I did it, the easier it became, the quicker it became. And of course, inevitably, as time went on, I was also doing gigs all the time, really. And I became able to say yes to gigs when I would get a call in the morning because a drummer was sick or whatever. And I would be there doing a gig with people that evening with 40 songs I'd never heard, or maybe, I'd heard a couple or whatever. But and I was able to do that because I'd normalized this skill of charting. Now, like I say, I think that is one of the biggest skills, and it's led to me to be able to just 95% of the time, I'd say 95% of the time I can listen to a song, and this is just because of the world that I'm in, so there's a caveat with this, but 95% of the stuff that I hear, I can listen to it once, chart it, done, I can play it. It's just, it's so a part of my routine and what I do, it's just natural, it's normal. It's normalised. It's so boring. It's normalised. Now, that's not to say that there aren't sometimes situations where something's put in front of me, I'm like, hold on, right? I need to actually concentrate here and I need to replay bits and, work out bits. Of course that happens. I'm human. It's fine. It's not a big problem. But again, this idea of normalising charting by just doing loads of it is kind of, yeah, I think that was my first instance of the understanding of normalization. Oh, that means I'm meant to take a break, and I was actually meant to turn that off, so I'm very sorry. But anyway, Yeah, I think that charting was my first foray, if you like, into normalizing things by just doing loads of it. And it's definitely put me in good stead. So there's one very big thing that I normalized a long time ago that has really helped me. And as I say, it's one of these retrospective things where when new opportunities come up and things, I notice things that scare me, I just think, right, well, if it's scaring me, I need to normalize it. How am I going to do that? So this was also another example of this. I know I've spoken about this before. By the way, can I just say, I'm really sorry when I repeat myself on stuff. My memory is so bad. I don't know. I think I'm repeating myself constantly. So I'm sorry if you've heard this story before, which you will have done. You will have heard some of this anyway. So another normalization situation was with The Voice Kids when I got that gig, which I've spoken about at length, but a big part of it is reading. And at the time, was no good at reading. I could read a little bit. Obviously, I was doing charts, so I could read a little bit. I could write my own charts, but they weren't necessarily... it was just different. It's not reading music. It's not the same. It's definitely not the same. It's a good basis, but it's not the same. And also reading someone else's music. Like, it's not my charts, they're other people's, and they're proper. They're not Emily versions. So the way that I approached that normalization was just to get the biggest collection of drum charts that I could in so many different styles. First of all, not styles of music, styles of writing, because everyone writes charts slightly differently. Even down to like fonts. I mean, it sounds silly, but it does make a difference. Also, there was a massive discrepancy in the how detailed each of the charts were. So some of them were very basic, like the very basic beats, no fills, nothing like that. It would just be a general kind of couple of slashes with fill over the top rather than the actual notation. Down to the other end of the scale, which was like every single little ghost note and every like nuance and a really intensive kind of chart. So I knew that if I kind of challenged myself learning all these different types of charts, that no matter what was put in front of me, I'd be able to handle it. And luckily, on The Voice Kids, Steve Parry, the legend that he is, writes the most beautiful charts I've ever seen. They are the perfect mix of, like, they're basically just like the perfect amount of information on a page. So enough to make you be able to do your job really well, but not enough that it overwhelms you. So thank you, Steve Parry. I love you so much. You know I love you so much. But yeah, so I was lucky in that situation. When I got into the situation, they were brilliant. But I felt so overprepared. It was so normalized. And I'm not saying that I sat down and was like, oh, I'm perfect. No. I was still scared. I was still anxious. There were many reasons for that coming into that room. However, the reading, my level of reading was at a level that I never even thought was possible for me. So that was a crazy situation. And actually, it was only like, I think it was 3 months it took me of like doing it for an hour a day. But I knew that I just had to make it so that it was not a thing. When a chart was put in front of me, it wasn't scary. It's just another day. It's just another day. It's just another chart. It's just another song. Let's go. What I will say is that at the time I had it in my head, and I mean, it's fine that I didn't do this because I did the job, but the next level for me would have been booking in to do a reading gig. But I was so scared of that, because for me that really could have gone one of two ways. Either it would have supported that I could do the work, I could do the job, or if it didn't go that well, it would have set me back. So, and it would have created more anxiety and fear around it when I might not have had the time to rectify it, if it makes sense. So I kind of did a cost benefit analysis, let's call it that. And I realized that probably wasn't the right thing in terms of making me feel confident. So yeah, it's kind of, this is going to sound awful, for me, normalization is kind of like draining all the energy out of whatever you're trying to do, so that it just is like every day. It's just rote. You're doing it by rote. I think that's the right term. Can I just say it's Monday, so my brain isn't quite connected yet, and which is fine. At least hopefully it's entertaining for you. And you're just going, Emily, what in the world are you talking about? A more recent thing, speaking of the voice kids, and more recent skill that I've been developing, and so cool, is this idea of, I say this idea, it's improvisational playing, or like soloing. So basically, I've said this before, but on The Voice Kids, it has a really good knack of exposing to you your biggest vulnerabilities, which is awesome and really painful and terrifying, and you cannot get away with anything. Because, you know, in basically, my thing is, or has been historically, I am a song drummer. That's it. I play songs and that's it. I would never, ever, ever, like, consider myself a drummer that can do improvisation. Or if I was on stage and someone yelled drum solo, they're like the scariest two words that I can ever hear, to the point that I would have a proper fight or flight response. Like, I would feel the blood draining from my extremities, like heart pounding, like just proper irrational fear of drum solos. You know, if I was in a situation that I'd have to do a drum solo, I would meticulously plan it so that I knew exactly what I was going to play, because the thought of just going on the fly, forget about it, I'd be falling all over myself. It's just terrifying, absolutely terrifying. So anyway, I've been telling myself this for forever, basically. You are not a drum solo player. You do not do drum solos. That's basically what I told myself. Anyway, as I say, The Voice Kids has this wonderful knack of bringing these things up. And for the whole of my career, I've managed to really successfully avoid any situation where improvisation or soloing is kind of involved. I've done that pretty successfully. Occasionally I'd accidentally fall into it and, you know, just deal with it. It'd be awful. I feel terrible about myself. But I'd tell myself, it's because you're not a drum solo player, so it's fine. And you kind of do the mental gymnastics to make that okay. However, in The Voice Kids, no matter what, because of the nature of the gig and because of just how wildly varied the situation is, you cannot avoid the things like your weaknesses, basically, in your playing, in your mindset. It's impossible. It's literally impossible. It's not about if these things are going to come up, it's when. And, you know, there were so many situations where there were songs and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. I'm not this sort of player. It was horrendous. And in the past, if it had been like a gig that I'd be called for in that genre, I'd be like, no, this isn't my thing. Like, I'm not doing this. I'm not the right person. But in that situation, you have no choice. It's like, you've got to make it work, which is fine. And it's been great. It's been so painful, to the point that I almost just swore, but I promised myself I won't swear on this podcast so that everyone can listen to it. But yeah, terrifying. Anyway, the thing that came up for me on the last season that we did was improvisation and soloing. The discomfort that I felt when there was nothing informing what I was playing, just, you know, I mean, discomfort is a really mild way of putting it. Fear, the embarrassment, to the point that it would undermine my confidence, which would then undermine every other aspect of my playing. This is the other thing with The Voice Kids. For me, if I felt insecure about something I was playing, I would spiral and it would affect everything. I sort of worked on that, obviously. That was one of the things that came up. I was like, whoa, this is a major issue that I need to sort out, because I can't have one moment affecting everything that I'm playing and affecting my belief in myself and my confidence in my playing and what I'm capable of doing. So anyway, that was a different year that all came up. But the next thing on the list that came up was this improvisation solo. So I was like, all right, this is my task for the next year, because that's what I do at the end of every season of The Voice Kids. I'm like, right, so what am I working on for the next 9 months until I'm back in the room with these guys? And yeah, like I said, this soloing thing came up. So I was like, right, how can I how can I normalize this? And I thought, I remembered back to this interview that I heard or read, I can't remember, with Neil Gaiman. And he was talking about the fact that he's got a writing studio at the end of his garden. And he says that he goes in there every day for a set period of time every day. And he has two options. He can either write or just sit there. He's not allowed to do anything else. There are no other options. He can't have his phone. He can't, you know, do emails. He can't do nothing. He either writes or he does nothing. And he does this every day. And at some point, you know, sitting there being bored, he's like, well, I might as well write. And I just thought that's a really, I don't know, I just liked this idea of kind of setting out this time. So I sort of said to myself, okay, well, what would be a realistic amount of time? And I was like, right, 30 minutes, which at the time actually was quite scary to me. And the idea would be just sit down and just play with no accompaniment, with nothing informing me, just silence, which sounds easy. It's terrifying. It terrified me. Talk about like the most vulnerable situation to me, because it is just me playing. Just what? So I was like, right, if I set it up so the environment dictates that I go in, I sit down, I sit in front of my drums for 30 minutes. I aim to play, but if I don't, then I'll just sit there for 30 minutes. I haven't yet sat there for 30 minutes, I'm pleased to say. But I knew, just knowing myself, knowing what I'm like, I was like, right, that's fine, that's a good start, but I need to load this situation up with other factors that will make me more likely to maintain this. Because inevitably there will be a hard day where I'm like, nah, I'll just skip it today. And that is a spiral for me. That's when I'll be like, oh, and I'll just skip it tomorrow. And then before you know it, you're not doing it anymore. But I was determined to do this. So another thing that I know about myself is that if I don't see progress or growth, I get very demoralized, very, very demoralized. And as I say, I could just envisage 2 weeks in being like, nah, this isn't working. I'm not getting anywhere. This is, you know, I'm rubbish, blah, 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 blah. And all those negative thoughts that have always existed about me being an improvisational player or a solo player would take over, because they've been there for so long. Like, they are so embedded in me. And it would just be proof. You're not getting any better. So I thought, okay, cool. Well, what I'll do is I'll record myself and listen back. And that's both audio and video. And then I was like, oh, well, that would be good, because if once I start getting comfortable, maybe I'll start playing some interesting stuff, I can chop it up and use it for social media. Oh, well, that's good. That's kind of a box ticked for me, because content, always good to be creating content for me. So, okay, that's good. And then I was like, right, I really, really, really want to normalize this. Like, again, I'm an extreme person, so you know this. So I just thought, well, the thing is that, you know, when I'm, let's say I get called to do a drum solo, I'm going to be on stage in front of an audience. Let's normalize that. I'm going to do this free playing in front of an audience. So at my most vulnerable, at the most scared that I am, at the most, like, at the worst player that I am, let me let the world see that. Let me let that be normalized. Let me allow myself to be human in front of people. Which may not sound like much, but it was terrifying. The other upside of doing it that way also did mean that there would be an amount of accountability flying around. You know, if I'm doing it every day, people are expecting me there every day. And I just thought, you know, for me, accountability and people relying on me is such a big motivator. It's like I say, it's the reason that I've carried on this podcast. You know, I know that I've had a few sort of like breaks here and there, but this is the most consistent that I've been since I've started it. And it's because of you lovely Patreon supporters. For those that are listening, like, honestly, you are such a big part of why I am able to come back week after week. Even if I'm not feeling great, I will still be here for you, because it's important to me to be here for you. Anyway, I know this about myself. So I was like, okay. And I managed to load all these things on top of this idea of just normalizing doing free playing and improvisation and soloing. And let me tell you, it's awesome. I love it. It's so much fun. Also, I get to chat to people afterwards, which is also really fun. But another thing is that I had a situation 2 weeks ago, I was playing a... Well, no, I wasn't playing it. I went to a gig, a friend's birthday gig, and he sort of said to me, oh, do you want to get up and play a couple of songs? And we'll do like a double drummer thing. So his regular drummer's playing, and I would just be set up on a kit on the side, and then we'd play a few songs. And I was like, yes, I'm well into that. Anyway, I realised that part of one of these songs had a moment where me and the other drummer would be trading bars. Now, in the past, two things would have happened. First thing is, if I'd have found out about it, I say found out about it, I've played this song so many times, I just had forgotten. But let's say I found out about it on the day and it was an in the moment thing. As I said, I would have been like, rah! Like just freaked out. It would have been awful. I probably would have just kept time because that's my safe space and is what it is. Or I would have meticulously worked out sort of bars to trade with this other drummer. But because I've been doing this free playing for the last year and a half now, I thought, right, this is an opportunity. I'm not going to prepare anything. I'm just going to let it happen and see what happens. So we had a sound check. So we did that. It was fine. I did it. I did fall over myself at one point. I was so annoyed. And do you know the only reason that I fell over myself was because I suddenly got really intimidated by the other drummer. I don't know why. It wasn't even logical. It was one of those things. I saw him do something and I was like, oh God, I should do that. It's ridiculous. It's the most ridiculous way of thinking ever. But I caught myself and I knew why it happened. And I was like, right, learn. We move on. And anyway, I did the gig. I still did not prepare anything. And I just went with the moment. And I did it. I didn't fall over. I don't know what in the world I played. I just know that I was happy with what happened. It is on video. I have not watched it back yet. I will at some point, but it wasn't about necessarily what I played. It was the fact that I did it like that. It was the fact that it worked, that, you know, it was legitimately a piece of improvised drumming that was purely, in the moment, the most honest, reactive playing, potentially, that I've ever done in a live setting, in a gig setting. And for that, I was so proud of myself. I'm still proud of myself for doing that. It was 25 years of telling myself that I couldn't do that, and I did it. And it probably doesn't sound like much to some, but to me, it was such a moment. It really was. It was breaking away every preconceived idea that I've had about myself for the last 25 years. Equally, even yesterday, I had a friend come into the studio and they were like, oh, can you play me something? Now, in the past, I'd hate that. I'd be like really reluctant. I would just play a beat or something, like something really simple, because it's awkward. I get embarrassed. I'm like, oh my God, like this is awful. It would always make me feel really uncomfortable. But again, yesterday I was just like, yeah, sure. And I sat down and I played random stuff and I felt relaxed and I enjoyed it. They enjoyed it. They were dancing around, so it couldn't have been that bad. And just being able to, again, just be in the moment with it was just wild. It was so good. I was so proud of myself. But again, this all came back to just normalizing it and doing so much of it that it's not a big deal. Like, it's just like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. Like, it's not a thing. Now, I will say, caveat. So I've got this whole thing at the moment, like, I feel like I'm only just becoming human, or I've only just become human in the past year or so, right? So there is a yin and a yang to everything in this life, and I'm sure most people know that. It probably seems very obvious to you. It was not obvious to me until the last year. And as great as all this, like, you know, normalize to get these skills up and to get to where you want to be, which I'm a big believer in, obviously, like I say, I've used it multiple times for myself. I will continue to because it works so well. But what I will also say is that you do lose a bit of the spark or the magic that comes with the kind of slight unknown, the anxiety, the excitement. I don't have that when it comes to these skills. Maybe I still do with the free playing a little bit because it's still fairly new to me. And there is something about being in the moment and just reacting. I don't know whether that will stay, but everything else, no. It's very matter of fact, which makes me happy because I, you know, at the end of the day, this is my job, this is my career, this is my profession. And I need to conduct myself in a way that is, you know, certain, and I need to be reliable. Not, and I'm not talking about necessarily other people relying on me, me relying on myself. I know that I can do my job very well because of the skills that I have learned over the years, to the degree that I, you know, have this skill set under my belt, as it were. And I know, therefore, that other people can rely on me. It's an integrity thing as well. There's a whole, you know, there's a whole realm around that and what being a professional means to me, and therefore what I bring to any table and the level that I work to. Again, it's an integrity thing. I just, people are employing me, I'm going to be doing the best job. But what that means is, for me, it's just, it does mean that there's a slight lack of sort of excitement, isn't the right word, but like spark and energy, because it's just like, it's my job, I take it very seriously. As I say, in the free playing world, it's kind of a little more, there is still a bit of spark, and obviously, you know, when you're on stage, you have moments on stage with other band members, with the audience, with the artist, where moments of just pure, I want to call it honesty and connection. They're beautiful, but it never comes from not knowing what I'm doing, if that makes sense. There are no unknowns, excuse me, in what I'm playing when I'm on a gig, when I'm doing a gig. And that, like I say, can be on stage, it can be in the studio, it can be anything. So that is the only thing that I would kind of warn about, because, you know, I was talking to someone else about this week. People say, like, think that, you know, I get to do this job and I adore it with all my heart and soul, but I think there is a slightly romanticized version of what being a professional musician is. And there are beautiful moments, don't get me wrong, but it's not as magical as you think it's going to be when you look at it from the outside. All that magic on stage that you see as a punter is very, there's a lot of work that goes into that magical moment for an audience member. And once you kind of start realizing that and indulging that and working through that, it's not the same. And as I say, I am so grateful I get to do what I do. I love what I do to the depths of my soul. But it's not like a spark thing. It's like a centering, knowing, confident thing. Which, again, I think is good. I think that's a good thing when you're coming on to do a job. So just be warned that the problem with normalization is that you can lose a little bit of that magic element. At least that's my experience. Again, you might have a completely different experience. I hope you do. But I think it's worth mentioning it because it's not what I expected when I was starting out. Definitely not. And now I appreciate it, and it makes me really appreciate when I find that spark in other people's music or in other things, because I know how to maintain that spark, if you know what I mean. I don't know if that makes any sense, and I'm so sorry if it doesn't. The other thing that I will also say about normalization is, be like, there is also not a dark side to it, but like, there's also situations that I've been in where I've been very aware that something is happening that I'm not happy about. And I think to myself, I don't want this to be normalized. So for instance, Excuse me, I haven't coughed like for 2 days and all of a sudden I'm coughing like a crazy person on this episode. I'm so sorry. I promised on the last one that I wouldn't be coughing as much and here I am just hacking away. So I was in a situation, I was playing with an artist who will remain nameless, obviously, and basically they were talking, we were on a gig, they were talking to the local crew of this venue so badly. It was horrendous. I was, embarrassed isn't the right word, it's not good enough, but I was ashamed. I was ashamed to be affiliated with this artist. I was ashamed to be on the stage. I hated it. I hated everything about this situation that was going on in front of me. I wasn't in a position to kind of say anything. And I thought to myself in this moment, I thought, I'm not okay with this and I don't want this to become a normal piece of behavior in my life. I always want to be outraged by that kind of behavior, if that makes sense. And I feel like the more you're around anything, the more normalized it becomes. Sorry. And in that moment, I was like, well, I need to leave. I need to leave. And it was in that moment, I was like, I need to move on. I don't want to be around this. And obviously there's a sliding scale with that. If you're talking about behavior of like someone that is important to you, like a friend or a family member or, a partner, fair enough, address it. That's fine. But sometimes it is just as simple as, oh, no, don't want to be around that. And if you're not in a position to kind of talk it out or you don't want to talk it out, like it's not that important to you. Like there are other things that are important to you. Historically, I have walked away. I've just gone, right. Not necessarily citing that as the reason, but I'm very cautious about the behaviors that are around me that become normalized. Because again, you can use that in a really positive way. If you've got people around you that are always striving to do great things and being very kind to people, that is the behavior I want normalized. I'm lucky that is the behavior that is normalized around me. You look at my family, they and my friends, my closest friends, they are the kindest people. They work so hard. They're compassionate, they're empathetic, they're just, I think they're wonderful humans. I really do. They're some of my favorite people. And to me, the behavior that they elicit is completely normal. I'm like, yeah, in my head, everyone's like that. Of course, you go out into the world, you realize maybe not. You talk to other people and they're like, you do know that that's unusual. And I'm like, is it? Well, it's not in my world. That's how we collectively conduct ourselves. That is how we strive to conduct ourselves. Don't get me wrong, we all have moments that we're not able to or whatever, but it's just really interesting. So anyway, normalization, sexy subject. But anyway, I hope that this has helped you in some way. I hope it's inspired you to think about if you are sort of heading towards goals, just thinking about how can you normalize it? How can you do so much of it that it's just another thing that you do? I'm really big into it. It's my favorite way of getting the most experience in a skill. I did the same when I opened up the remote recording studio. I just decided, right, I'm going to do absolutely loads of this. I'm just going to record loads and loads and loads and loads and loads so I can work out my processes, so I can work out, mic placements and just get the best sound that I can and make sure that I'm communicating in the best way that I can. Same with this podcast. I'm like, well, I'm just going to do loads of episodes and I'll work it out as I go. And if you look at the very first episode that I did on Tour Bus Tory, there's so much wrong about that. There's so much to be improved upon. But now I'm kind of like in a place where I just enjoy sitting down and having a chat to you, which again feels weird saying that because I'm essentially talking to a camera, but I do feel like I'm talking to you. It's strange. I feel like I'm talking to my friend, and I hope you feel that too as well, by the way, because that's how I feel. I feel like we're just mates here sitting, chatting, although you've been very quiet for a long time now. It's probably your turn to talk because I know that I can ramble on. So anyway, on that note, I'm going to love you. I'm going to leave you. If you enjoyed this episode, please do like, share and subscribe. If you'd like to sponsor this podcast and support this podcast, you now can over on Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com/EmilyDrums. And then if you want to get in touch, about anything that I do. I do a plethora of things, you know, I won't go into it, but you can explore and get into a deep rabbit hole with that. Go to emilydrums.com. You can see all the stuff that I do over there. And yes, anyway, I hope you're well, wherever you are, whatever you're up to. Oh, and I guess, when is this coming out? This is coming out on the 23rd. So if you celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas. If you celebrate Hanukkah, Happy Hanukkah. If you are just a human, well done for existing, and just go have a lovely day, whatever you're doing. Also, for the people on the Patreon, I'm doing a meetup on the 29th of December. That's going to be a festive meetup. We're going to do it online. We're going to sit, we're going to chat, we're going to have, I might even crack open a whiskey. I'm not going to lie to you. And we can just chat about whatever you want. Just hang out for an hour or so. If you want to be a part of that, like I say, go over to patreon.com/EmilyDrums. You can sign up, and as a supporter, you'll get to join in on that. So make sure you do before the 29th. But yeah, anyway, sending you lots and lots of love. And yeah, I love you guys. All right, I'll see you later. Bye.